Thanks for listening and for being a part of Jason Q's Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program, and thanks everyone for listening, for your dedication, for sharing, and for your contributions to the most important news that we can put out there into the real world. And if you're listening and you're a dedicated listener, you'll start noticing that all of this news is starting to converge with the truth movement well ahead of the narrative and the mainstream establishment dictating the so-called official narrative. And yet we see these two news trajectories coming together, forcing the rats to either run or to fight back. Today's disturbing news of the Nord Stream gas pipelines, 1 and 2 both being sabotaged, as was indicated or predicted by our very own Patrick Henningsen just this week, is telling us that we are so close now that what's going to come, well, it's going to shock us whichever way it is, and we're going to have to just play it out. But we are at long last getting to what must be the end and the great reveal. And the great reveal happens when the people simply realize what's been done to them. Today's news in the study from the mRNA being detected as soon as 1 hour after receiving a COVID vaccine shot in 7 out of 11 women in their breast milk. Well, we called this over a year ago, and now we learn we were right yet again. This is the most disturbing news that you could possibly have in relation to the vaccine today, because it's yet another lie that we were fed and told that we were the conspiracy theorists. We're not the conspiracy theorists. We're simply the news cycle ahead of the curve, and we're getting proven right more and more every day. The wheels are at last falling off for the deep state in their establishment coup for eternal and complete power. Now, with reports this morning on Sky News of 97% of people voting in the referendum to shift back to Russian control in the 4 disputed regions of Ukraine, the media and authorities are officially first disputing those results. Unbelievable. They have a go at Donald Trump for disputing the election results that we all saw, that hundreds of thousands of votes with 100% of a vote for Biden turning up at 3 o'clock in the morning, but that was acceptable and normal and the safest election in history. And now, of course, when it happens against them, they're crying foul. And now we learn that in Ukraine, people are being threatened with 5 years imprisonment if it's found out that they even voted in said referendum. There is no doubt we are heading towards war, however that war plays out, whether it will be full nuclear, whether it will be just a people's revolt like we're seeing in Iran this week, or something else. On this program yesterday, I was joined by George Eliason, who actually lives in Donbass, and he accurately predicted the outcome of the vote. Funny that, once again, we're right here on TNT Radio. Now, another story, it's a big story, it's probably the biggest story that affects us here in Australia as a collective, and that is democracy or monarchy. Democratic Republic or Constitutional Monarchy or Corporation. Would the New World Order indeed be a corporation in charge of planet Earth? What would be the nature of our country or the surrender to a higher power? Perhaps a republic would provide for that ascension to cede to a higher power. The choices, the twists and the turns. What if in pursuit of becoming a republic, an overzealous new head of state assumes greater than symbolic powers and gets away with it? Perhaps we had a President Rudd or a President Turnbull, both with globalist loyalties. Would it be easier if we became a republic just to then be turned over and join a future New World Order, and the Australian government simply operates as administration only under a World Health Organization-led pandemic treaty? Or a World Economic Forum-led economic digital currency and social credit score system with black-shirted police, with unlimited cameras and facial recognition, along with chip tracking, monitoring our behaviour and punishing us for breaching said norms and expectations. Meanwhile, in real time, we are watching the Labor Party virtue signal itself to political sainthood as they contribute to Mother Earth being saved by the humans, with a God complex, equally as they sacrifice the humans in order to save it, like it cannot save itself. Our planet will be perfectly fine all by itself. It's been here for billions of years and will be here for billions more after we humans are extinct. However, the same Labor Party attempting to justify its position in telling us not to expect gifts in the budget or a surplus, no shit, we're $1 trillion in debt, Jim Chalmers, PhD doctor, but because we are doing well due to our commodity sales, that is, we can sell coal and iron ore overseas, but punish ourselves into buying an overpriced electric vehicle just so we don't use fuel anymore in this country. Isn't the world all connected? Meanwhile, Earth will be renovated, transformed, and updated. As if overnight, the population being handed their notice of eviction by injection. Everything is changing. All players are on the field now. The faster we awaken, the quicker it is over. But they who are punishing this agenda have massive resources and planning and foresight. It is built and manufactured all in-house, all of it under total control in plain sight. No one ever questions, no oversight, just to be sure. And that is why we are here. And that is why today, in a moment, I'm going to introduce you to a superstar in the freedom movement. His name is Topher Field, and he's coming up next here on our show, the Jason Q Citizen and Friends Show. If you missed your favourite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT radio website. We're also on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. There's no reason to miss out on anything on TNT radio.
The latest as it happens.
Every day, something new.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Topher Field has been a political commentator for 12 years and a leading advocate for less government and more freedom, speaking out on issues such as diverse as freedom of speech, water management, government red tape, taxation, climate change, and much more. He was the lead Senate candidate in Tasmania for the Liberal Democratic Party of 2022. He's also a documentary filmmaker, a human rights activist, and he is an absolute superstar of the movement. Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program.
Well, thank you very much. That's a very very generous introduction. I do appreciate it. It's always good to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back on the show, Topher. And I'd like to just first start by getting your take on your feel for the overall movement at the moment with everything that's going on. Are you seeing it as clearly as I seem to be seeing it at the moment, but this great big chessboard of moves that's going on seems to be converging at some form of denouement, some conclusion is coming here. We feel like it just can't go on any longer. The narratives are at last converging. What's your take?
Sure. There's a thing called Jumping the Shark. Was it Fonzie? What was that TV show?
Was it Brady Bunch?
Whatever show it was. It was before my time, but I'm just familiar with the expression. Yes. And there was an episode where he was water skiing behind a boat and the shark gets in the way and he jumps over the shark. And it's widely regarded as the moment where that TV show kind of lost its way and everyone just kind of rolled their eyes and laughed. And it was all downhill from there. There is an element for me where I feel as though we are watching a jump the shark moment where, or to use a different metaphor, overplaying their hand. We're seeing these people that have had so much time to prepare, and the aggressor always has time to prepare. The defender, which is us in this case, the people, we have to react, at least in the early stages. But the aggressor has plenty of time to make their plans and to put their assets in their places and so forth. And so what we've seen over the last few years is a lot of what was planned in secret has become much more visible. We've seen what looks like an unstoppable move. Well, of course it looks that way in the early stages. I mean, Hitler looked unstoppable in the early stages of the Blitzkrieg. Why? Because he planned. He knew exactly what he wanted to do, and it took time for the defenders to then marshal their forces and begin to respond. And what we're seeing now is that increasingly more and more people are beginning to push back. More and more people are beginning to speak out. We're seeing some really interesting things globally. We're seeing this, you mentioned some of the uprisings that are happening in Iran at the moment. I certainly wish them the very best, although I think they're incredibly brave. And given Iran's history, it's unlikely that those protests are going to end particularly happily for the protesters. But I certainly hope that that they do, and that we see a much more freedom-friendly government there. But that's probably the most extreme example of a very repressive regime that is now facing open, bold demonstrations on its own streets. But there's many other places where some really interesting things are happening. We're seeing elections in the US going heavily towards the Republicans. Now, I have no love for the Republicans. Let me be very clear about that. I'm a libertarian, not a conservative. And someone who loves to, you know, add taxes and add spending, as Donald Trump, you know, certainly added spending, lots of new regulations and rules and everything else. So I'm not here defending the Republicans, but given that they suffer the same delusion that we do, that they only have these two choices, the fact that they're making the choice to go towards Republican with the expectation that the Republican Party will be led by either a President Trump or a President DeSantis come 2024 indicates a certain sentiment, a certain attitude that they have that is gathering a lot of momentum. Something like 90% of Trump endorsed candidates are winning in various levels around the US, from school boards to local city levels and so forth. We see in, you know, Sweden and again in Italy, again, these are not perfect candidates. I'm not holding these people up and saying, oh, the Messiah has come. There's a lot to be concerned about, particularly in the case of Italy with her past and some of the attitudes that she's had in the past. But these are populations that are making some of the most freedom-friendly choices that are available to them within the system. And I think we need to recognize that rather than jumping up and down and getting too caught up on the flaws that these people undoubtedly have, let's recognize in the bigger scheme of things that populations en masse are starting to make the most freedom-friendly choices that they can within mm-hmm. the system. Now, the next step, of course, as you and I both understand, is people that are willing to start operating adjacent to the system, in addition to the system. And this is why I have the slogan, good people break bad laws. Sometimes you have to be a bit of a naughty boy in order to actually stand up and do what needs to be done. And more people are getting to the point where they're willing to do that. They're willing to be called a criminal by their own government for the sake of their own conscience in order to do what they know is right. So I think it's coming to a head now where they've made all of their grand moves, all of their initial moves have been made. In the process, they've had to reveal their intentions, which is inevitable. That's always the way it works. We've seen their intentions. And now, en masse around the world, whether it's Denmark, whether it's Canada, whether it's Australia, whether it's, you know, the US, whether it's Iran, people are reacting now. And then our numbers are getting greater. Our voice is getting louder. Our willingness is only becoming more and more strong and more determined. And I think we're entering a phase now where the contest, the game, as it were, is about to start in earnest.
It's it truly is momentous, all of it. We were watching something and waiting, and we've been waiting and waiting, and you've framed it beautifully, Topher. What I wanted to pick up on was a couple of points, and I've been saying this for a while now, particularly in relation not to as a result of Giorgia Meloni's election here, and people going out there and trying to find a perfect candidate, as you alluded to, and I even saw it on your Facebook page, and with the people putting up the usual, oh, but she's linked to the Rockefellers and all this type of stuff. Well, pull it back a little bit. You have to infiltrate a poisonous 100% controlled system to get in. So we can't punish her for having to infiltrate the system to get elected in the first place. And so what comes of that is the concept of being able to walk both sides of the fence. And a perfect example of walking both sides of the fence is how Donald Trump is still pro COVID vaccine when we know that he got COVID before the vaccine. He told everyone about hydroxychloroquine. He said it's always going to be your choice. And yet he comes out with that interview with Bill O'Reilly 12 months ago, and he says, I've been triple jabbed, and Bill O'Reilly says, I've been triple jabbed, and the jabs are great. Well, you couldn't be more further from where his supporters came from in that situation, and yet he was playing both sides of the fence. Now, this is not just exclusive to Trump at all. I mean, here's Giorgia Meloni having to play both sides of the fence. People are saying she was pro-vaccine certificate, but she came out and she said, I'll never vaccinate my child for COVID. She's got more of a chance of dying from a lightning strike than she does from COVID. So that's called playing both sides. Now, another master of playing both sides is Russell Brand. Here he is saying all the right things on his YouTube millions of views podcast, and yet there he is photographed with people from the World Economic Forum. Now, that must have people scratching their heads going, hang on a second, who do you work for? Who are you working for? We've seen Admiral Rogers, Mike Rogers, the very man who showed Donald Trump that he was being spied upon in Trump Tower, the very start of Russiagate. He came to Australia recently and gave a speech and basically went completely down the establishment party and wouldn't answer any questions in relation to where the freedom movement was hoping to get to. General Flynn even the same way. So this is an art form in politics, and it's probably our own political naivety that caught the freedom movement out. We thought by saturating the election ballots with names of candidates across multiple freedom parties would guarantee that we'd get more of us elected than we actually did. That was a flop. So we're now learning the sophistication of how this movement works. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, Topher, was I remember being at university writing a paper in political history. Gosh, it feels like it must be 30 years ago, and that's how old I am. But it was on progressives and reactionaries, and the question was asked about whether a particular leader was either a progressive or a reactionary. Now, progressive, as we all know, comes from the left side, and we're always looking at the idea of new ways of making things fairer and more for equal opportunity. That's kind of what progressivism was all about. However, the modern progressive movement is no longer just about that. In fact, it's evolved to a point it's about permissiveness. In other words, if anybody can think up anything, then we must allow them to do it, permit it, and then deal with the fallout or the consequences. And a perfect example would be the rush to this transgender agenda and the idea that children as young as three are now being told that, you know, they've got some form of understanding or autonomy if they want to change their gender, which makes no sense to the average person in the street, and certainly not to parents who may see that their children are really struggling. So progressivism, in a way, is becoming a form of reactionary or reaction. It's not progressive as such. It's not well thought out. It's just jump and jump, react and do. And so there's a blurring now in political ideology. That's kind of what I was trying to explain and set up. What I need to do is take a quick break, Topher, but we'll come back and just explore that in relation to what we're seeing in real time. It's absolutely riveting. It's fascinating. And I couldn't think of a better guest to be able to talk about these things from an academic perspective and then applying them to real world principles, particularly as we head to this Victorian election next month. And we've got to talk about that. This is TNT Radio.
You should hear what Jesse Zurawell is talking about.
In addition to calling up 300,000 reservists, which does not include conscripts or university students, Putin has made some what could be described as inflammatory statements, if I can use that cliche, regarding the possible use of nuclear weapons.
In Russian language media, I mean, especially among hardliners, like people who really support the special operation, they're saying this is really, really bad because, first of all, territorial gains aside, what basically has happened is that Russia took control of territory, and then those Ukrainians who wanted to cooperate with Russia and consider themselves Russian, if the idea here was that Russia was going to go into Ukraine to protect ethnic Russians, to guarantee that, you know, Ukrainians can speak Russian and live in harmony and peace with Russia, the problem is that all these territories that Russia goes into, they're not guaranteeing that they're staying, you know? And sometimes, in some cases, they say like, oh yeah, we're here forever. And then, you know, a month later, they leave. How can you do this? It's so self-defeating, and it makes cooperation or welcoming the Russian military as liberators impossible. It's like a death sentence.
Jesse Zurawell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification. 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
There's no dispute. The jabs are not safe or effective. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
In breaking news out of Sky in the UK, more than 30 million people are being urged to take flu and COVID vaccines to stave off a potential twindemic, according to the latest data coming out overseas. Topher, it doesn't seem to end, does it? It's just let's wheel out yet another, our one-trick pony yet again to keep the fear going, but it seems that the people are not taking it as easily as they used to.
Well, I've often thought that probably the greatest thing that you could do to improve the quality of governance worldwide would be to make all politicians on their first day in office sit down and read through all of Grimm's fairy tales and a whole bunch of other sort of what we view as children's stories. Because have they not read The Boy Who Cried Wolf?
Yes.
Do they not understand what happens in that story, both in terms of the loss of credibility that they're inflicting upon themselves, but also the simple fact is, if there were actually an outbreak of something that was actually serious at the moment, it would be impossible for them to get people's attention because we've heard it all before. And rightly or wrongly, we're going to continue to be cynical and mostly rightly, of course, history tells us that the vast majority of these things do work out to be incredibly mild. I loved what you were talking about before the break, because I've observed similar things at a slightly different scale. So obviously I know the streets of Melbourne very well now, having been involved in numerous different protests there and I've lived here since I was 2 years old. But the streets used to belong to the socialists, used to belong to the so-called progressives, but even the most hardline of those. You could get large numbers out there for Black Lives Matter rally, or you could get large numbers out there for some sort of a climate change rally, or these various causes, Occupy, you know, whatever the latest cause is, would get decent sized rallies happening on the streets of Melbourne. Melbourne is, unfortunately, a very left of center city. And so there was a lot of popular support for those sorts of things. But protests in the streets traditionally have always belonged to the rebels, always belonged to those wanting to change the status quo. And the reality that we're seeing now is that actually those philosophies, they are the status quo. They're not trying to change the status quo at all. They're not actually challenging anything. What they've become are the conservatives in the sense that they are trying to conserve and hold on to the gains that they have already made. And we see the symptoms of this all over the place. We see that the arts world now is increasingly pushing back against a lot of these woke ideologies, a lot of this sort of left-wing socialist stuff. We see now comedians that have achieved uncancelability. Now, for a long time there, no one was above being cancelled. Everybody had to play the game and be politically correct unless they wanted to be deplatformed. Well, now we have actually a small but rapidly growing group of comedians, and slowly actors are now beginning to speak out, musicians are beginning to speak out, and they're getting past the attempts to cancel them, and they're surviving the cancel attempts. We also saw with the protest movement, so the arts have traditionally belonged to the revolutionaries, those who want to change things. We're seeing that coming around now to freedom lovers are taking over the arts bit by bit. We also see that with the streets. Protest has traditionally belonged to those that want to change things, and that in our lifetimes up until now has been the left of politics. It's been the Red Brigade. And what we've seen now in Melbourne, at the very least, is that they no longer hold the streets. I was just at the Nigel Farage event. I had dinner with him and then was at his the event where he was speaking in Melbourne 2 nights ago. And there's another example. You were talking before about people playing both sides. There's another example of someone whose attitudes towards jabs and COVID I found very, very disappointing. But you've still got to give him credit for his incredible work when it came to Brexit. So sometimes you just have to do that. But when he came in 2018, there were massive protests. Police had to get called out and so forth. This time, there were, look, I've seen photographs. There were at least two. There might have been as many as five people. That's it. That's all they could muster. Yeah. To make noise about Nigel Farage coming to Melbourne, to the streets of their city. Rewind a little while to November 20th, I believe it was, when 2021, where we had the Freedom Movement had the biggest pro-freedom protests in Melbourne's history, actually, in terms of just the sheer number of people. It was the biggest gathering that's ever happened. And we were there in the Flagstaff Gardens, and Antifa, in classic Antifa style, acting like fascists, but trying to pretend that we're the fascists. Yes. They tried to stage a counter-protest. And they got a couple of thousand people when we had, as reported by Sky at the time, I believe it was 250,000 people was the report, you know, compared to maybe 4,000 at best. So they've lost control of the streets now. They're not even bothering to show up. They threatened to cause all sorts of trouble at the premiere of Battleground Melbourne, my documentary. We had a premiere at the cinemas in a suburb called Camberwell. And there was a big social media campaign. They're all saying, we're going to come out in massive numbers and there's going to be trouble and there's going to be violence and we're going to protest and blah, blah, blah. Not a single person, not one single solitary person actually showed up to protest. Wow. Now, what this is symptomatic of to me is that they have achieved what most of them, I mean, clearly there's still some that are really pushing for some really nuts stuff, but by and large, they've achieved most of what they wanted to achieve. And now our roles have reversed. Those standing for freedom are now the revolutionaries. And those who got what they wanted over the last 30 years through the sexual revolution and everything else, they're now getting comfortable. They're now falling into apathy. They're now trying to consolidate their position. And instead of thinking about the movement as a whole, they're thinking about their career and their position within the movement. The infighting is kicking in. All of these things that used to plague the so-called conservative movement. And again, I don't consider myself a conservative. I'm a libertarian. But all of what used to plague the so-called reactionaries, which I think was always a politically charged term to try and denigrate them in the first place.
Yes.
That's now beginning to plague the so-called progressives because the roles have reversed. Now, what's really interesting to me is that I think it's going to be another 10 to 15 years before they realize what's happened to them. And if we can be quicker than them at recognizing the changed strategic landscape and adapt accordingly and not sit there with the old stereotypes, oh, the arts belong to the left. Well, why? And does it still? Let's not let our perception lag behind the fast-changing reality, because if we can get on top of the new opportunities, the new techniques, the new methods that are now available to us as the protest movement, as the revolutionary movement, faster than they can get their minds around their new role as the establishment, then we can make a lot of ground very, very quickly. But we have to be willing to let go of old paradigms and adopt new ones very, very quickly.
Well said. Terrific. We're going to come back after news headlines with a whole lot more. This is TNT Radio.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. 2.5 million people have been evacuated in Florida, where Hurricane Ian is now expected to make landfall earlier than previously forecast. Gas continues to pour into the Baltic Sea from three giant holes in the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines, which connect Russia and Europe, after they were damaged in an apparent act of sabotage. And a groundbreaking new study has shown that mothers are transferring the spike protein in mRNA COVID vaccines to their babies through breastfeeding.
At TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7 online globally. No matter what, we've got you covered on TNT Radio.
We certainly do have you covered on TNT Radio. The list of guests that are coming aboard is something to behold. I interviewed George Eliason yesterday, all the way from Donbass in Ukraine, and he just interviewed Peter Navarro, who had served in the Trump administration for the full term, and he'd recently interviewed Paul Manafort, and that was a groundbreaking, explosive interview that you would want to check out on the channel. All you have to do is, you can go straight to the website, tntradio.live, click on shows, find your favorite presenter, and just scroll through and see the different interviews that are out there. Or, of course, you can download the app on your phone from either the Apple or the Play Store, depending on what phone you use. And once you put that in your car on Bluetooth, you'll never listen to another radio station again. It's absolutely terrific. But I'm here now with Topher Field, and we are exploring the difference at the moment between the progressives becoming the reactionaries becoming the progressives. It's a little bit academic, but when you get a feel for it, you'll start to understand and start to see how the world is being moved and manipulated one way or another, and you yourself will be able to feel where you fit in, and all of a sudden it will start to become quite more comforting in all of that, because you'll know that what you believe in was right all along, and it's that consistency here in a very changing world that is going to keep us afloat. Now, just to sort of digress for just a moment, but Topher, this week, seeing that Albert Bourla, the CEO of Pfizer, four jabs, Paxlovid, and now two COVID infections in 2 months, you do have to laugh, don't you?
Yeah, and this is the thing. We have to not allow them to change history, because what they like to say now is, oh, we never said you wouldn't get it if you'd been jabbed. Well, yes, they did. Early on, they did. Now, they then changed what they were saying, because what they were saying was clearly ridiculous. But now they're trying to pretend like, oh, no, we never said you wouldn't die. Well, yes, you did. You said we wouldn't even get sick. That's where it started. And you said that the trials that didn't actually really happen conclusively showed that it was safe and effective. That's where we started. And yes, they're now trying to gaslight us as things like this happen. Four jabs, second infection in a couple of months. And they're trying to say, but I haven't had the booster for the latest variant. That's why. Well, hang on. The boosters, most of them aren't even adapted to the latest variants. When people are going back and getting boosters against the latest variant, they're getting the exact formulation that was created originally in many cases. Now, some obviously there's different brands of vaccine. There's a lot of detail there. But they're trying to pretend like they never claimed things that they very clearly claimed, and we can never let them get away from those claims. We can never let them change that history, because they are damned by their own words, their own lies, their own promises that have simply not come true.
It's quite painful, isn't it, when you have to be on your toes almost permanently to defend against the gaslighting, and at the same time to create this rearguard action, which is to put that information out there. And as we do that, and it takes up more and more of our time, then obviously we have to build bigger and bigger armies. Look, the other point in all of this, Topher, is that in the 3 years of COVID, give or take for the exact months, but The people who've been researching and have predicted all of these little steps along the way, and all of them seem to be coming true on this side of the fence, all of us are incredible consumers of information, whether we're reading, watching, listening, writing, thinking, you know, becoming philosophers and predicting all of this stuff, and all comes true. And yet on the other side, we are just, you and me are technically just citizen journalists, just normal people like anyone else on the street who took this on because it interested us and it was too important not to do. So anyone out there can do what we're doing. Correct. And we just end up where we end up, and we encourage it and more than anything else. But on the other side of the fence, those that are the consumers of the mainstream narrative, of the mainstream news, have done very little reading, writing, or anything, but just watching their little snippets every day. So it's very hard for people to accumulate all this information, be so nerdy and be gaslit to believe that they're conspiracy theorists because all their information they read is all wrong or whatever it is, and that's the justification. And yet on the other side, they're not even looking at information. They're simply being told what to believe. At what point do we somehow distill all of this? And do you see that there's going to be a success there in the information sharing that's coming up, and that the work that people like us are doing, that we're going to also have a victory at that point, that we do become the news?
There's a lot of layers to this. One example from my own life, someone that I know who is a police officer assured me that they were much better informed than I am, because every morning when they get to work, there is a bulletin from the police that updates them on everything that they need to know. And because they read that bulletin every day, and it comes from the government no less, that clearly there was nothing relevant or truthful that I could possibly know that they didn't. And when you're dealing with that level of it's not just ignorance, it's ignorance on top of naivety, utter naivety. I mean, this is a perfectly decent human being, utterly naive to the authenticity of so much of what the government is going to say, and the fact that as an enforcer of the government's rules, they actually need them to be somewhat ignorant. They need them to be obedient, not well-informed. And those are two very different things. So when you're up against that, the temptation is to try and find better information, better experts, that sort of thing. And that's very important to do. And, you know, whether it's Jay Bhattacharya, whether it's Professor John Ioannidis, whether it's, you know, these various sort of leading lights that have come out and started to say some really good things over the course of the pandemic. We have some amazing data from some very good studies. All of that's great. None of it works at changing these people's minds. And let me tell you my theory why. They don't believe what they believe because they were convinced using data and evidence. They believe what they believe because believing it made them feel the best that they've ever felt in their life. Let me get a little bit academic on you again. Mm-hmm. You're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Of course, yep.
This is a sort of triangle-shaped thing on a sheet of paper that you would have seen in either high school or uni, depending on what you studied and where. And the base of the triangle, the widest part of the triangle, contains the most essential things for human survival: oxygen, water, shelter, these sorts of things, without which you will cease to exist very quickly. And then all the way up the very top of the pyramid is kind of the triangle is kind of the ultimate in life. It's called self-actualization. And all the way up there, you are living your best life as the best version of yourself. And the theory is that all of us sit somewhere on that triangle in between bare level survival and ultimate self-actualization. Now, for most of us, our lives are pretty mundane, pretty ordinary. We're going to work, we're paying bills, we do a few fun things every week, we do lots of unpleasant things every week. Very few people in Australia are genuinely struggling for survival. I don't say that to be disrespectful for the few that are, but there's not a lot. But also, very few people in Australia are living their best lives. So most of us are sitting somewhere as the meat in that sandwich. Mm. Now, along comes COVID, and here's a really interesting thing that happens. The politicians overreact and they shut down the economy. And in so doing, they push a lot of people down towards that survival level of the triangle, right? Mm-hmm. But those that aren't financially affected, people on welfare, people with government jobs, laptop workers, retirees, etc., they are given this incredible opportunity to move up towards the most meaningful chapter of their lives ever. Here's what I mean. You turn around to them and you say, staying home saves lives. Dobbing in your neighbor who's not following the rules is the right thing to do and it's going to save lives. What you've just done is you've weaponized slacktivism. So slacktivism, of course, is when people are willing to be very vocal online. They're willing to click on all the right causes, say they're going to go to all these events. I mean, you know, Kony 2012 was kind of the ultimate example of that. We're all going to get this warlord, Kony 2012. And they had events organized and people were going to show up in massive numbers and protest. According to all the RSVPs on Facebook, it was going to be the biggest protests in history, and bugger all people actually showed up. This is slacktivism. Now, what if you could activate that same self-righteous instant gratification type of reward system inside someone's brain that selectivism gives them, but actually do it in real life? There is no better, more rewarding, easier way to give someone a dopamine hit than to say, sit on that couch and play computer games all day and grandma will survive. And dob in your neighbor. Just send us an email, make a phone call to dob in that neighbor that's jeopardizing grandma's life. And what happened was these people moved up towards that pinnacle of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. They actually started to live more meaningful lives than what they'd ever had before. And so now when we come along to them and we say, hey, we didn't need to do that. Lockdowns have actually hurt people rather than helping. We're not having an academic discussion with them. They're not looking for evidence to prove that we are right. What they feel is a threat against the most meaningful couple of years that they have lived in their entire life. And this is why so many people have been not wanting to let it go. Because when they let go of all of the lockdowns, they let go of all of the rules, they just let people get back to living, then they lose the sense of purpose, which for many of them was the only time in their life they had a genuine sense of purpose. What we're up against here is not based on fact, and that's why facts aren't working to make a difference. What we're dealing with here is a sense of purpose and satisfaction, a level of living that these people have never had before, most of them, and will never have again, and deep down they know it. Now, what that says to me is that we actually need to attack this at a much more fundamental level than just the information, than the data, the studies, et cetera, because that's just not working. I'm becoming increasingly vocal as time goes by about the anti-human movement. And I'm challenging people. I'm literally saying to people, hey, you would have stood on the guard towers at Auschwitz if you were born in a different country at a different time. And then you would have gone to church on Sunday and said prayers and sang songs and gone home and made love to your wife and then gone back to the guard tower on Monday and watched people get executed. Not because you're evil, but because you're apathetic, because you are morally disengaged. I'm actually becoming much more brutal in how I'm dealing with these people. And I'm kind of sidelining the academic stuff and just getting to the heart of it. And just saying, if you are someone who calls yourself a good person, but you obey bad laws, then you need to relinquish your claim to being a good person. Good people break bad laws. That has always been true. It will always be true. And if you are not willing to stand on the side of the people that were being so badly harmed by lockdowns against such an insane overreaction to a serious flu, basically, or a serious cold, being a coronavirus rather than a flu virus. If you weren't willing to stand for those people, then don't kid yourself that you would have stood up for the Jews during World War II, or that you would have stood up for rural people during Mao's Great Leap Forward, or for Ukrainians during the Holodomor. You would never have stood for anything. And so I'm actually really going in at that moral level and really directly attacking that self-righteous sense of purpose. And of course, that gets a massive reaction. And I'm actually finding, because I'm attacking the real heart of the problem, I'm actually having more success with that than I've ever had attacking with actual data.
Great. That's just next level information. And you've provided me with so much encouragement, because starting this show today and talking about walking both sides of the fence, we literally are breaking this down in real time. And for my listeners, none of this conversation today has been workshopped or pre-produced. This is purely spontaneous between Topher and myself. And it's kind of one of the luxuries that we do have on this show, that some shows we will, I'll talk to my guests in advance about where we want to head. But Topher, there's always just too much going on in real time that this is the best way to do it. And I'm just so pleased you've been able to explain it so succinctly. And we'll have to get that that short segment there, and I'll get that edited and put out there for people to go and listen to again and to share. Mm. And I'm reminded at this point, Topher, of the book by Henry David Thoreau, Civil Disobedience. And mm-hmm. I do recommend that anyone get online if you want to understand what Topher's talking about, good people breaking bad laws and civil disobedience. You can download it for free online. You'll find it everywhere. It's not very long, but Henry David Thoreau, Thoreau, is a great place to start. And it's very interesting that that, and along with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, for those who are a little bit spiritual, would have recognized that both have been addressed by the great teacher Wayne Dyer himself as part of the work that he did in his career. And that's somebody else that you might like to look at for a little bit of guidance for the late, great Wayne Dyer. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue our exploration here with Topher Field on the one and only TNT Radio.
How is that green energy transformation working for you? Energy chaos descends upon the world.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Yahoo Finance is reporting this week that firewood is the new gold in Europe. Prices and theft jump in Europe as Russia's gas cutoff boosts wood demand ahead of winter. 1,000% increase in EU energy prices. The New York Times is reporting that, quote, crippling energy bills are forcing European factories to go dark. Due to the shortages and high cost of energy, manufacturers are furloughing workers and shutting down lines because they can't pay gas and electric charges. Makers of metal, paper, fertilizer, other products that depend on gas and electricity are now being shuttered in Europe. Half of Europe's aluminum and zinc production taken offline. But don't worry, I'm sure China and India will be able to fill this manufacturing void. This, my friends, is the Great Reset in action. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
One day, my 8-year-old son, Michael, was playing football with his friends in the mud and got an infection that led to sepsis.
Sepsis is your body's toxic response to an infection that can lead to tissue damage to extremities.
They needed to do 2 upper amputations and 2 below the knee.
Sepsis causes an average of 38 amputations per day in the United States. To learn more, go to sepsis.org.
When you need to know what's going on around the world and at home, keep it on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. And whilst I didn't ever think that I'd be handing out book titles for people to read, but along with Henry David Thoreau's Civil Disobedience, check out Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, the story of a man who lost his family in the Holocaust and went on to find real meaning in his life. The Art of War by Sun Tzu is a compulsory reading for anyone trying to understand what's going on in the real world. And while you're at it, The Art of the Deal by Donald Trump will give you an idea of just how that man actually thinks. And then you can't go past Leadership by Rudy Giuliani as well, which tells the story of how he managed the 2001 up to that point in the collapse of the 9/11 World Trade Center, but of course how he cleaned up New York post the bringing down of the New York crime families. Some really extraordinary reading out there, and perhaps when you're looking for a gift for yourself or for someone coming up to Christmas, and yes, I believe we're still allowed to celebrate that that holiday here in Australia, it's nice to buy a nice, beautiful hardcover version of your favorite classical book to keep there as a reference on the side of your table. And why not pick up a copy of the Bible while you're at it? It might just change. But Tova, that's not really what the show's about, but it's the idea that we are finding that everything old is new again in many ways as we reframe and get a better perspective. And you've been able to provide the duopoly of ideas, the trick between where we come from and where we are, recognizing that the system is turning on its head. The progressives are becoming the reactionaries. The reactionaries are becoming the new progressives in all of this. And what I'd like to be able to explore is, what is your way out? If you were in charge of the world for the next year, how would you get us out of this mess? Have you ever thought about that? You don't have to come up with a definitive answer. It's too big a question. But do you allow yourself to think of what is the ultimate good in all of this?
Yeah, look, for me, I try to bring everything that I advocate for, everything that I advocate against, et cetera, back to a core set of principles. And really, those principles do provide answers to that question. But before we get there, I want to add another book to your recommendations. And that is Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky. Now, a lot of people react when I say that because Saul, of course, was very much a hardline communist, was on the fringes of some genuine terrorist groups, etc., and also mentored Barack Obama and various other things. So interesting person. And most people assume, us good folk like us would have nothing that we could possibly learn from someone like him. Well, let's come back to what I said before. The roles are reversing. Now, Rules for Radicals applies regardless of what it is that you're trying to achieve, what change you're trying to achieve. It is for change makers. It's for the radicals. It's for the people who are not in the establishment. And guess what? That's us now.
Yes.
So I would very strongly suggest people get a hold of Rules for Radicals and read it. My wife wants me to actually rewrite it and do an homage to it, but rewritten for a more modern world and for the changed politics. But I'll get to that maybe one day after I've written the other book that I'm working on. So anyway, to your question, there are a couple of very simple principles that I always bring everything back to. I believe in universal individual human rights. Now, each of those words is extremely important. Universal means they apply to everyone. Every what? Every human, because the word human rights is in there, right? Every human has these rights. Individual, why does that matter? Well, because there are some people that want us to buy into group politics, identity politics. You have rights because you belong to that group. No, human rights are individual. And if we have individual human rights, then we don't need group rights, right? This group identity doesn't have to be shoved down everybody's throats if we just recognize that individual human rights are a thing. Yes. Universal individual human rights. Now, I layer a second layer on top of that. No one is special.
Yep.
We all have universal individual human rights, but no one is special. No one is more equal than others. Now, what this means, if you really start to dive into it, which we don't have time left for, but if you really dive into this, it very quickly undermines the power of government. Because any government that claims to have its authority by the consent of the governed has to immediately pass a couple of tests. If you have universal individual human rights and I have equal universal individual human rights, how is it that me and a bunch of other people who only have equal human rights can get together and then tell you what you can and can't do? Where did we get that power from? If we don't have it at an individual level, how do we get it at a corporate level? And the answer is you don't. You can't add up a bunch of zero and get one. You never get to one. You're always at zero. So if individually we do not have a certain power over each other, then we cannot possibly have that power corporately. Now, of course, every single government in existence violates that very simple concept. But if you understand government correctly, and I would go back even to the Old Testament and you know, have a look at the original design for the system of judges that God actually instituted in the Old Testament, what we had was a relatively simple set of laws that could be read in about 3 days, because they used to get together every year and that's what they would do, read the entire law in 3 days. And then they had a system of judges to make judgments in the event that someone broke the law and hurt somebody else or, you know, killed the cow or whatever it might have been. They didn't have a mechanism for the creation of more laws. This is the really interesting thing about the Old Testament system of judges. There wasn't a mechanism for the creation of more laws. So what God was saying was, here's your laws. You can read them in 3 days flat, and you will never need any more. These are all the laws that you will ever need. And it was the children of Israel who then went and went to the prophet Samuel and said, hey, we want a king. We want to be like all these other nations. We want a king. And Samuel says, well, the king's going to tax you. He's going to make you fight in his wars. He's going to take your grain. He's going to take your kids. And the people said, hey, we want it anyway. So this was never God's design for government. This was never a part of the plan that we would have people ruling over us. Universal, individual, human rights. If we understand those four words and we apply them equally to everybody, the appropriate role and power of the government very quickly becomes evident. If you try to hurt me, do I have the right as an individual to stop you from hurting me and to potentially even hurt you in return in my efforts to stop you from hurting me? Yes, I do. Therefore, the government has the right to act in the defense of other people in the event that they're being hurt. But the government doesn't have the right to go out and do something that the individual could not do. Can I reach into your bank account and make you pay for things that I like? No. Then how is it that me and a million other people voting for a government can suddenly somehow give that government the power? A million zeros still adds up to zero. If we don't have the power as an individual, then we still don't have the power as a corporate. And this is what's missing. Universal, individual, human rights. Properly understood, it explains everything about how government ought to operate.
Profound. You know, yesterday on the program, we had Rob Cribb, one of your colleagues from the New South Wales division of the Liberal Democrats. Good and guy. We got onto this exact same subject where he talked about individual human rights. Mm-hmm. I think that alone is profound that we're arriving at that, not through just through general conversation, but it's very clear, therefore, that we are all converging in those narratives, which is where this program began today, which is quite extraordinary. Now, given your stance and positioning, what you've just said, and we're running out of time, and you've got about 3 minutes left. Have you got a position on or thoughts on the potential for Australia to become a democratic republic in the future?
Look, in the end, the system of government is far less relevant than how engaged the people are. Mm-hmm. I find it very hard to get excited about whether we become a republic or whether we remain a monarchy. I really don't care. We, the people, are broken and we are not holding our government accountable. And it wouldn't matter whether we had a republic or the current system. We have failed. We have failed. So I find it very hard to get excited about that particular debate. My concern about major changes to the Constitution right now, so my concern, one of the main reasons why I wouldn't necessarily like to see us switch across to being a republic is not because I support the monarchy in any particularly profound way, but simply because there are so many people with so many agendas that giving them the chance to get in there and try and influence what this new constitution says at a time like this, I think is a very risky exercise. I say the same thing to people that want a Bill of Rights. Now, a Bill of Rights, I think, is a very good thing. I think, you know, I used to say, we shouldn't need a Bill of Rights. It should all be, you know, self-evident. Well, clearly it's not self-evident. The last few years have taught us that. So I now actually say, yes, we do need a Bill of Rights. But if we were to write one right now, we would have all sorts of people trying to get in there and influence the way that looked and what was written in it so that people have all kinds of things, all kinds of so-called rights that don't actually exist. So I think we've got to do better ourselves at holding our government to account and understanding what is right, what is wrong, what are universal human rights and what aren't. And once we get back to that basis, we can then reshape how our politics works in our own image. But trying to do that now, while we just don't have any level of understanding of government, why it exists, what its powers ought to be, etc., would just be a tremendously dangerous exercise. So for that reason, I'm inclined to stick with the very broken system that we have and work on improving the quality of the people rather than changing the structure of the government at this moment in time.
Yeah, it's a terrific answer, and it tells us a lot, because what's the point of fixing something that is broken when we don't know how to fix it and we don't know what the solution would be at the other side, and we've got far too much work to do. But what it's not saying is not to have the conversation. This is the point of the exercise. We continue to have that conversation, and Topher, it's been terrific to have you back on the program, and I really enjoyed this conversation today. And for anything, it is a very shareable conversation, so for you listening at home, please, when you get to download this tomorrow, to send it out to your friends and share it on your social medias, because what we've been able to allude to here is going to unstick a lot of the questions that we have around our questionable leadership at the moment. But I tell you what, having Georgia Maloney on our team is a lot better than not having her on our team, and we need to understand that in the quagmire of what's going on. So much to look at. Now, very quickly, in 10 seconds, Topher, how do people find you online?
Topherfield.net, battlegroundmelbourne.com. That's the number one thing you can do. Go to battlegroundmelbourne.com. Watch Battleground Melbourne for free. You can also get merch and other stuff there. But make sure you share that, because people need to see that before the election.
Wonderful. And we didn't even get to talk about that, but we will be able to again soon. This is TNT Radio News Next.